Shalom. Greetings from Israel. And iFaith 106 from Obadiah. This is the last message in our current unit, which is on the intermediate prophets. Next, in Unit 16, we'll look at the late history of the Old Testament. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Daniel. Obadiah is the shortest book in the Old Testament, but it's well worth reading. I warn you, though, it's not pleasant. It's not a nice book, but I don't think we should dismiss it. It's written in the 580s, very soon after the Babylonians destroyed Jerusalem and its temple. We read about that at the end of 2 Kings. Let's read the first two verses. The vision of Obadiah. This is what the Sovereign Lord says about Edom. We have heard a message from the Lord. An envoy was sent to the nations to say, "Rise, let us go against her for battle. See, I will make you small among the nations. You will be utterly despised." We read it's a vision of Obadiah. There are some 20 people in the Bible called Obadiah, or some form of that name, like Obed. And the message is against Edom. Edom is the mountainous land south and east of the Dead Sea. I'm speaking to you today from Masada. Now, if I look behind me, I can see the Dead Sea. On the other side, I see the mountains of Moab. So there's Ammon, there's Moab, and there's Edom over there. But why so stern? Why so serious? Why is God even bothering to deliver a message of rebuke or challenge to such a tiny nation as Edom? This is not a big power, a superpower like Assyria or Babylon or Egypt. Well, we need a little bit of biblical background. Edom is part of the family of Abraham. In the book of Genesis, Abraham has a son, Isaac. Isaac has his sons, Jacob and Esau. Esau's other name is Edom. Jacob basically becomes Israel through his 12 sons, and Esau becomes Edom. And there's tension between Edom and Israel throughout the Old Testament, not just in the book of Genesis, but ever after. We see that Edom is typically dominated by Israel. Sometimes it's free. It could be dominated by Judah, Assyria, or Babylon. But they were, let's say, held down, suppressed, and they're not reacting well. Now, certainly, when we have a problem, a relational problem with another person, or maybe it's between one people group and another people group, and wrong, injustice has been done, it's understandable that we feel deeply, that we're hurt. The Bible doesn't tell us to deny the feelings, but what we do with those feelings, how we react, is important, because that's in our control. The problem with Edom is that, yes, she was wronged, but she did not react well. Verse 3, "The pride of your heart has deceived you, you who live in the clefts of the rocks and make your home on the heights. You say to yourself, 'Who can bring me down to the ground?' Though you soar like the eagle and make your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord." She was overconfident. She's proud. They felt secure in their rocky strongholds. I'm speaking to you from the old fortress of Masada, which the Romans finally took in 73 AD, 3 years after the war, the Jewish war, ended. But Edomites felt secure. And as one scholar put it, they had the pride of a people whose national defense system seemed to them to be impregnable. But in the following verses of this one-chapter book, we read the prophecy that her riches would be plundered, that she would lose her wisdom, she would lose her mind, she would lose her wise men, and she would lose her military power, her capability. But apart from arrogance and pride, what did the Edomites do that would deserve divine judgment? Well, I mentioned the fall of Jerusalem to the Babylonians and in the end of 2 Kings. According to the Old Testament Apocrypha, and this may not be true, but it says the Edomites joined in and they actually burned the temple. Well, whether they actually burned the Jerusalem temple or not, we know that they had the wrong attitude and they did join in the plunder. The Edomites are mentioned in Psalm 137 and Lamentations 4, and also in Ezekiel 35, where we read, "Because you harbored an ancient hostility and delivered the Israelites over to the sword at the time of their calamity. Therefore, as surely as I live, declares the sovereign Lord, I will give you over to bloodshed, and it will pursue you. Since you did not hate bloodshed, bloodshed will pursue you. In other words, Judah, the kingdom of Judah, Israel has been taken by the Assyrians in the 700s. Now in the 500s, Judah is falling to the Babylonians. The Edomites think it's time to settle the old score. You know, let's rub their faces in it. And they are treacherous. Because of the violence against your brother Jacob. Now this is, remember, Esau is Jacob's brother, but Edom is the brother country to Israel. You will be covered with shame. You will be destroyed forever. On the day you stood aloof while strangers carried off his wealth and foreigners entered his gates and cast lots for Jerusalem, you were like one of them. You should not gloat over your brother in the day of his misfortune, nor should you rejoice over the people of Judah in the day of their destruction, nor boast so much in the day of their trouble. Well, they did join in the loot. They even attacked the refugees. They took plunder. They really took advantage of Israel. And of course, the Jews didn't forget that. But notice that they also stood aloof. It's not exactly like they were helping. Remember, they bore a grudge. They wanted vengeance. And here the Babylonians are basically giving it to Judah. And the Edomites jump on, and they pile on even more insult. And they stand aloof. And sometimes we may not be actively trying to get even or hurting somebody, but we have kind of an emotional distance. We stand aloof, hoping something bad will happen to them. And if it does, don't look at me. I didn't cause it. That kind of passive attitude, gloating, that kind of passive aggression, we'll talk about in a moment. And in this passage and up till almost the end of the short book, we read the phrase, on that day, a phrase that should be by now familiar to us from the prophets. It's referring to a day of judgment, either the day of judgment of a particular nation or ultimately the day of the Lord, to which all these smaller days of the Lord point. Standing aloof is like watching a drowning person and doing nothing. You're not exactly innocent, even if you didn't actively drown the person. They're gloating. They're attacking refugees. How about you and me? Do we try to get even? I mean, do we bear grudges? Or do we leave the balancing of accounts, the settling of scores, to God alone? One more reading. The day of the Lord is near for all nations. As you have done, it will be done to you. Your deeds will return upon your own head. Just as you drank on my holy hill, so all the nations will drink continually. And they will drink and drink and be as if they had never been. But on Mount Zion will be deliverance. It will be holy and Jacob will possess his inheritance. Deliverers will go up on Mount Zion to govern the mountains of Esau, and the kingdom will be the Lord's. So it actually ends in a positive way. But there's a shift here from the judgment of Edom, this small country, on the other side of the Dead Sea here, to judgment of all nations, which is something referred to in both Testaments. And so in a way, Edom represents all nations. I mean, whether you're big or small, no one gets off. Everyone will be judged. God is fair. There is justice. We also see that God holds Israel's neighbors accountable, whether it's Egypt or Phoenicia or Ammon or Moab or Edom or whoever it is. God is fair. And Judah, capital Jerusalem, will be recompensed. God will be fair. He saw what Edom did and what Edom didn't do. Edom didn't help. Edom gloated. Edom even took advantage of Judah. God sees that. God is sovereign. Now, getting even, the title of this reflection here, if that means fair, things being fair, we need to leave that up to God. It's his kingdom. And he assures us here at the end of Obadiah and in many other passages in both Testaments that ultimately it's God's kingdom. He's in charge. He'll be fair. We don't need to take the law. We don't need to take vengeance into our own hands. That's a teaching in both Testaments. What about retaliation? One of the most famous verses in the whole Bible, of course, is Leviticus 19:18. Love your neighbor as yourself. But that's not the whole passage. The most important command is love God with everything, right? Deuteronomy 6. But in Leviticus 19:18, it says, don't bear a grudge and don't seek vengeance, but love your neighbor as yourself. Sometimes I was having a talk with an older fellow last week, and he said he's not really much for the Bible or Christianity, but he believes in just loving other people. Well, that's nice, and it's certainly true. That's at the very heart of our ethic. But it can be a bit vague, a bit nebulous, a bit undefined. When you say, oh, that means you don't bear bad attitudes, no grudges, you don't take revenge, you don't even want something bad to happen to someone who's caused you trouble. Well, that's a little bit different. And that is what Leviticus 19:18 says, that very famous passage, or what is called the second most important commandment, retaliation. Sometimes we retaliate not directly. You know, it's not like you set your neighbor's field on fire, but we can hold aloof. Or there can be passive aggression. We drag our feet. You don't like your boss, so you take an extra 5 minutes at lunch and steal company time. Or you take resources from the company. Passive aggression, where you make comments that could be taken two ways, and you're not exactly technically on the attack. A good lawyer could get you off, but you're not being very nice either. Passive aggression. This is not uncommon, especially in our day where we hesitate to speak the truth to each other. What's the point of this talk on Obadiah, on getting even? What can we learn from this little country? Well, actually, it's learning what not to do. So let's not be so proud of ourselves. Let's not imagine that we're so high and mighty, so important that God won't bring us down. Pride goes before a fall. And if God is sovereign and even means fair, then we should leave the evening up to God. We leave vengeance to Him, for indeed, it is His kingdom.